Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sexpectations, Helping the Next Generation Navigate Healthy Relationships by Barb Winters. Narrated by Lisa Larson. Section 1. The Deterioration of Relationships. Chapter 1. As long as you're happy. The world looks for happiness through self-assertion. The Christian knows that joy is found in self-abandonment. If a man will let himself be lost for my sake, Jesus said, he will find his true self. Elizabeth Elliot. After a church service, Michelle, a friend nearing retirement, stopped me to chat. I haven't seen Sue in a while. How's she doing? She asked about our mutual friend. One of Sue's sons moved in with his girlfriend. Oh, really? Michelle's mouth dropped. I wasn't sure if she was surprised by the situation itself or because she hadn't already heard the news. Ignoring Michelle's reaction, I shared that Sue was heartbroken and still processing her son's new living arrangements. Her reply? Well, as long as he's happy, that's all that matters. I blinked. What could I say? It wasn't the time or place to argue biblical principles. Besides, she was only repeating a common comeback. I nodded politely and moved the conversation to a different topic. We hold these truths. Whether the statement is meant as consolation or the sender truly believes it, I hear "as long as you're happy" or some form of this phrase frequently, both inside and outside church walls. I understand this sentiment from someone who doesn't subscribe to God's word, but this opinion within the Christian community is puzzling. How have we strayed so far from biblical principles? Even the older generation isn't sad when hearing someone lives outside God's teaching. How did we get to the point that even within church settings, we send the message that happiness trumps godliness? And how does this affect the future of the church? More importantly, how does it affect our children's future? Being happy isn't bad. After all, the United States Declaration of Independence says we are all created equal and possess rights our Creator gifted to us, including the right to pursue happiness. From the beginning of the country, Americans have been inspired and encouraged to pursue happiness. We see it in the media. In the 2006 movie, The Pursuit of Happiness, based on a true story, the main character is a single dad. He invests his money in a product that doesn't sell well and finds himself residing on the streets with his son while trying to earn a living. At first, he's unsuccessful, but he eventually meets a businessman who, through a series of events coupled with hard work, propels him into a lucrative career. The movie promotes the idea that anyone can be happy regardless of lineage, upbringing, or status. But does the constitutional right to pursue happiness equate to seeking it as an end goal? And does the means for obtaining it make a difference? We can conclude, based on their writings, that our forefathers didn't intend for us to seek self-gratification with no thought of others. Rather, they wanted us to know that our freedoms extend beyond dwelling in a land with no king. We have the freedom to choose a lifestyle that produces our best selves. Our lives don't need to be directed by a monarchy. Instead, we can use our God-given intellect to make personal decisions. Certainly, God wants us to be happy, to enjoy life. But as we will explore later, genuine joy comes from Him, not from seeking a life of pleasure. As long as... The portion of the statement that sends it askew is the qualifier as long as. Where are the boundaries in this phrase? Is it okay to eat an entire chocolate cake as long as I'm happy? Can I drink until I can't stand up as long as I'm happy? What if I quit my job and can't pay my bills as long as I'm happy? What if the statement is turned against me and becomes as long as they're happy? Is it okay for my date to flirt with another person in the middle of our outing as long as he's happy? Is it okay for a parent to leave a child home alone all night as long as the parent is happy? Can we treat other humans as objects as long as we're happy? Is it acceptable to murder your companion as long as you're happy? Where is the line in this type of reasoning? Are there limitations? The as long as you're happy people may now be thinking, well, that's taking it a little far. But isn't that how society inched its way to this disposition to begin with? By pushing the line just a little, and then a little more? We've been pushing that line for so long, we don't know where the plumb line is anymore. We don't know where we started or how to get back. Happiness as an end goal. What's wrong with being happy? Nothing. But happiness is fleeting. It's based on emotions and circumstances, whereas joy comes from the Lord and is an internal state of being. Pursuing happiness purely for happiness's sake doesn't allow for the tension created by God's refining process when we seek Him. It opposes the pursuit of God first and gaining joy as a natural outcome. His word states, "Those who look to Him for help will be radiant with joy. No shadow of shame will darken their faces." Psalm 34, verse 5, New Living Translation. Happiness is not universally definable or measurable. Goals should be specific and measurable. Since happiness is subjective, how will we know if we've achieved it? And what if we finally arrive at that feeling we've been chasing, and it's yanked away the next moment by something out of our control? We become frustrated and angry. A focus on happiness minimizes a sense of personal responsibility for poor choices or wrong decisions. It curtails the desire to stick it out and work through the rough times. If a pleasure seeker isn't happy in a relationship, she moves on. A church friend might even comfort her with the statement, "God must have someone out there who's better for you." This self-gratifying attitude is not fulfilling. While one may experience temporary bliss, it's short-lived and lacks satisfaction and true peace. It doesn't deliver what is promised. And as long as your happy mentality within the church supports these false messages. Happiness is more important than being content with God's plans. We've elevated the pursuit of happiness above God's word and seeking His will for our lives. If we don't sense abundant glee, we assume we aren't in the right place at the right time. We haven't learned how to patiently listen and wait for His peace to fill us. If we aren't experiencing happiness, we aren't following God. We've been conditioned to believe the litmus test for whether we're in God's will is how we feel. But sometimes God allows discomfort to expose insecurities or sinful behaviors, ours or someone else's. To find our calling, we should ask, "How can I be happy?" Rather than asking this question, maybe we should ask, "How can I pursue God and His will for my life?" He created us and will point us toward goals generating deep felt joy. Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Psalm 37, verse 4. This underlying chase what brings you pleasure state of mind has trickled down to millennials and Gen Zers. Many are bold outspoken, and stand up for themselves, all great qualities. At the same time, constant accessibility to computers and smartphones, coupled with teachings from their predecessors, conditions them to seek whatever brings them immediate bliss. The result is that today's children and young adults face heavy loads of anxiety, worry, and depression. Many are lost, insecure, and wishing for something better. The younger generations are growing up in a world of pornographic images as sex teachers and hookups as goals, with peers and influencers shaping their well-being. Their culture celebrates individuality and, at times, emotionless relationships, if you can call them that. Thankfully, parents are recognizing that their children need help. Let's explore this as long as you're happy world they are growing up in, starting with hookup culture. What is hookup culture? An increasing number of preteens, teens, college students, and even older singles have an indifferent attitude toward casual sex. It's becoming an accepted, even celebrated norm. Donna Freitas, a professor and researcher, lists three criteria for a hookup in her article, A Good Samaritan Response to Hookup Culture. A hookup is brief, from 5 minutes to all night. It includes some type of sexual intimacy, anything from just kissing to intercourse. And most importantly, it takes place with the assumption that there will be no emotional or otherwise attachment. When the encounter is over, each person walks away with no expectations. The iffy criterion is alcohol. College students who take part in hookups are known to drink before and during a hookup party. In the same article, Freitas distinguishes a hookup from hookup culture. Hookup culture sells the idea that it's normal to have an attitude of ambivalence toward sex and one's partner. The notion that college students in general are hooking up and are okay with it is promoted and encouraged within hookup culture. In order to appear normal, students act as if they approve of hookup culture. They are purposefully vague in their description of a rendezvous, keeping the details mysterious or ambiguous. Whether they only kissed for a few minutes or spent the night together, both women and men can hide behind the word hookup. They can brag of participating in hookup culture without exposing themselves as either prudish or promiscuous, thus protecting their reputation and keeping up appearances at the same time. Individuals engage in these meetups for several reasons. We may assume attraction is the main purpose, but it's actually a desire to fit in, which is a type of peer pressure. Because the culture says hooking up is common, individuals feel obligated to participate just to prove themselves as normal. But humans are not naturally indifferent. Therefore, participants walk away unfulfilled. Students are left feeling empty or desiring an attachment, but are reluctant to listen to their inner promptings. Widespread acceptance. At first glance, hookup culture seems primarily confined to college campuses. However, if we pay closer attention to our surroundings, we notice mainstream media, including sponsored ads and posts on social media and shows on streaming apps like Netflix, reference hookups frequently. These sexual encounters are purely for self-pleasure and come with no intended commitment. While this behavior has a greater reputation within student life, it's also promoted by corporations and individuals via media and advertisements as standard conduct for all singles, regardless of age or lifestyle. My family and I watched a few episodes of New Girl, a television series that first aired in 2011. The show features three men and a woman who share an apartment. From the outset, it's apparent that the primary aim of each character is to hook up with someone, anyone. They even talk about hooking up multiple times. Within the first few episodes, the three men living with Jess, the female roommate, encourage her to find a partner for rebound sex after a breakup. On a separate occasion, one of the guys attends a wedding specifically to locate a hookup buddy. The characters believe casual sex will solve their problems. Lonely? Hook up. Hurt? Hook up. Mad? Hook up. Then all will be right in the world. Until it isn't. Because inevitably, whatever problem existed to begin with remains after the sex is over. Since the series won the Critics' Choice Television Award for Most Exciting New Series in its first season, and was still a favorite on Netflix at the time of this book's publication, it's safe to assume people watch and are influenced by its messages. Evolution of hookup culture. Hookup culture did not originate with Netflix, though. According to researcher Justin Garcia, hookups became more frequent in the 1920s because people began purchasing cars. Therefore, youth were able to leave their homes to date. Their parents weren't close in proximity, so they felt freer to explore their sexuality. This is also the time period when courting morphed to dating, as speakeasies, bars, and movie theaters became common places where young men and women could socialize. The sexual revolution during the 1960s brought the concept that sex doesn't need to be tied to marriage, or even a monogamous relationship. It is interesting to note that the pill became available in 1960. This newfound freedom for women meant they didn't need to associate sex with procreation. Women felt empowered and began to express their desire for sexual pleasure. Although some groups blamed oral contraceptives for changes in the United States, the article, The Pill and the Sexual Revolution on PBS, explains that historians now think the pill did not actually cause the sexual revolution. Instead, these forces worked together to foster the emerging hookup culture. The popularity of television, movies, music, and advertising contributed to the influence of the media on the culture. According to Lisa Wade, author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus, movies like Animal House portrayed college as more than a place to get an academic degree or even find a spouse. College was the place to sow your oats, have fun, and party hard. And this idea stuck. My experience in the 1980s. When I began researching hookup culture, I assumed I knew nothing about it. I grew up in the 1980s and figured hooking up was a newer phenomenon. I asked others about their experiences and had an enlightening conversation with a friend in her early 30s. She was sexually active in high school and became a mom at the age of 16. The baby's father left, and for a few years after her daughter was born, she continued to seek fulfillment through one-night stands. On the weekends, I dressed up in my cutest clothes and went to parties. We stood around a bonfire and glanced about, hoping to catch someone's eye. No one wanted to go home by themselves at the end of the night. When she mentioned a bonfire, I thought, wait a minute. I know this scene. I've lived this scene. Suddenly, I was 16 again and standing around a bonfire next to a keg, clinging to my red solo cup filled with beer. I feared being left alone and wished the guy I had a crush on would ask me to go with him, the term used for dating. In high school, my friends and I broke onto the back nine of the golf course at the local country club to hang out and drink. If we found someone old enough to purchase alcohol for us, we drank wine coolers, the cheapest brand available, of course. Otherwise, we were stuck drinking whatever alcoholic beverage someone offered us. Occasionally, we drove to a classmate's home in the country lit a bonfire, and drank around the keg until curfew. The highest form of acceptance, at least in my eyes, was either arriving with a guy or leaving with one. When I rode with a girlfriend, I hoped she wouldn't abandon me, or that my latest infatuation would strike up a conversation, proving he was attracted to me. At one such party, the Big Bash kicking off the high school football season, I drank so much I could barely stand. My ride had an earlier curfew than me. Thinking it was better to wait that extra hour to sober up before greeting my parents at the front door, I accepted a new guy friend's offer to take me home. Along the way, we stopped at his house. I only remember two things about this detour. I knocked something off a shelf in his bathroom while trying to be as quiet as possible, and it began to snow on the way to my house. The rest of the night is a blur. I saw him the next day in English class. I had no clue what, if anything, to say to this guy who had driven me home in his fancy car. Had we kissed? Had we gone further than kissing? Did he consider me his girlfriend? In the end, I said nothing, and neither did he. That night scared me enough to take note of my drinking limitations, but didn't stop me from pursuing the guy, whoever he might be, who would make me the happiest girl on earth. The party hopping continued, and I had more encounters I'm not proud of. Through the discussion with my younger friend, I learned that even I grew up in a hookup culture. While I may have been hoping for a long-term relationship, the guys weren't. However, the attitude of the latest generation toward hookups is a ramped-up version, one that exploded with the introduction of smartphones in the first decade of the 2000s. Now, everyone has access to whatever they want, whenever they want it, regardless of whether the information is true or false. And there is plenty of false information regarding what makes someone happy and how to find pleasure in a relationship, including the pornography available at our fingertips. The online pornographic world. Pornography has exacerbated the idea that hooking up is normal, natural, and a perfectly acceptable means to satisfaction. What many parents don't understand is that today's pornography is readily available, more graphic and violent than ever, and out to capture the minds of our children. It's nothing like the Playboy of yesteryear. While my generation had to plan ahead to watch an inappropriate video, today's children stumble onto an image or video clip while innocently scrolling. Young kids who are too young to run a vacuum or cook on the stove search for a word they don't know and become exposed to a whole new world. Advertisements appear on their sidebar as they complete a homework assignment. Curiosity gets the better of them, and they click. One click is all it takes. Just like you and I get lost on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, clicking one video after another, they are off and running, accessing free pornography easily. But children don't just search for it on their own or stumble onto it accidentally. Sometimes their friends show them. Kids are eager to share their newfound knowledge and freely stick their devices with the offensive material under the innocent eyes of their friends or even acquaintances. I've heard stories from mom friends stating that their 6-year-old or 7-year-old was shown photos or videos during sports practices, playdates, or during school. One mom told me that a 9-year-old girl showed her 10-year-old son pornography while both parents were in the same room. Sometimes our young children report these incidents to us because they are shocked by what they see or understand the dangers. But many times, especially if no one has talked with them about pornography, they don't say anything. Pornography was in our home for years without my knowledge. The day I learned that my 14-year-old son watched porn, I was blindsided. I felt a gag reflex at the back of my throat when I heard him say, "I was watching porn." What? How could that be? I thought I had misheard, or that I was living someone else's life. We taught our children biblical principles and the difference between right and wrong. We homeschooled them and took them to church. My husband was a pastor. I thought all those components equated to raising children who knew when to say no to worldly pleasures. But I was wrong. My son was watching pornography when a bogus warning popped up on his screen that threatened him to pay money or the person on the other end would call the police. He was petrified at the thought of being arrested, and out of fear, came to his dad and me in a panic. That day changed my life. I can still visualize my son standing in our yard and revealing this secretive information to us. My eyes were opened to an underground world I didn't know or understand. The shock, pain, hurt, anger, shame, and feeling of loneliness changed the trajectory of my life. But porn isn't the only negative influence smartphones brought with them. Social media affects what we think of ourselves and how we interact with others. These virtual communities have upped the comparison game and set our emotions on edge. One moment, we are riding a high created by extra likes and flattering comments. And the next, we are face down in our pillow, reeling from one semi-negative comment said by someone we've never met. And whatever emotional roller coaster we are riding, our children are on one going four times as fast with steeper hills and more curves, twists, and turns. Devices granting access to anyone at any time ushered in a new way of introducing yourself to a potential partner. Whether searching for a long-term relationship or a quick fix to a sexual need, sending a nude or sexting is now equivalent to saying hello. Per Camille Mori, Jessica E. Cook, and others, in The Prevalence of Sexting Behaviors Among Emerging Adults, a meta-analysis, not only is consensual sexting an emerging behavior, but so is non-consensual sexting. I was at a small group with some church friends and was explaining how middle schoolers send nudes on a regular basis when one of the ladies shared her experience. Before my husband and I got married a few years ago, I was on several Christian single dating sites. Men sent me unsolicited photos of their penises all the time. This is a grown woman with adult children who was receiving photos of what used to be private parts. Another friend, a single lady in her 30s, chimed in. "Yep, I've been on those sites. Happened to me too." All I could think was, "Ew, who wants to see that?" The 2020 pandemic and lockdown intensified this hookup culture and pornographic atmosphere. What already existed worsened. With children and adults alike spending an unprecedented amount of time staring at screens all day, it was the perfect storm for the pornography industry and predators to capture the attention of more consumers. Thankfully, the pandemic also brought attention to what most hadn't known or had ignored. Pornography and groomers for human trafficking are in our neighborhoods, and we began discussing it. I work part-time with a nonprofit and go to local schools to talk with middle schoolers and high schoolers about making healthy choices. Recently, I was talking with eighth graders about avoiding risky behaviors, and I mentioned the dangers of sending and receiving nudes. After class, one of the girls came up to me. Some old man sent me a pic of his private stuff. It was gross, so I reposted it for my friends to see. She laughed. She didn't find it odd. Nor did she understand that even two decades...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?